You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where writers and readers meet.
And story is everything.
We're Jim and Bobby Bell.
And that
welcome.
Opening music was by our good friend Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band, and always gets us going with our toes tapping, right? Yeah.
So
we have a really good show for us tonight. Who's our guest?
Steve McGuire.
And we're going to bring Steve on. We could go ahead and bring him on. Hello there, Steve McGuire.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Good. Before Jim does your intro, I just have to say that you want to read this book. And but you do want to read it with all the lights on. You might want to have a glass of wine or a cup of coffee or something to, you know, kind of keep yourself active. You don't necessarily, I read this in bed with, you know, the little light on and no. but you want to read this book. So Jim, tell us about our guest tonight. Tell us about Steve.
Yeah, we have a very distinguished guest, you know, Steve McGuire. He retired in 2008 as the Chief Justice of the Federal Trade Commission, where he received its Distinguished Service Award and was honored by President George W. Bush for his service to the nation's judiciary. Steve had a three-year legal career, serving as an attorney and a federal judge in Washington, D.C. Now, he has traveled to over 65 foreign countries, including 10 communist countries. Among his more memorable trips were those to Cuba, Africa, India, Vietnam, and Japan. And in July of 2019, he was teaching English to high school students in China. Welcome. What a background, huh? What a background.
World-class traveler. Here, do you want to hold up his, slide his book?
We have one other line. Must say he lives in Naples.
Florida
with his wife Doris, the golden retriever Henry, and a mini golden doodle Alfie. Is that a breed?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
And we're talking tonight about the second of the books that he's written, Fractured Power. And we're just delighted to have you with us, Steve.
Thank you. Enjoy being on the show.
Yeah. So do we just want to start with, tell us a little bit more about himself?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself and maybe how you got started writing?
Yes, that's what I was going to get into. Actually, some people ask me, I make a lot of presentations about my books. I've been on several radio shows, across the country in this past year. My wife, Doris, serves as my agent and a marketing manager, so she set me up with a lot of good interviews. And so I'm oftentimes asked, how did you decide to become a writer? And I'm not so sure I ever decided to do it. It was just something I was always pretty good at, and I attributed in part to, in high school, I had a really outstanding English teacher. Mm-hmm. And she gave me such a solid background in English and grammar that I felt, I could use the English to its best extent. The other thing, when I was younger, I had somewhat of a stutter. So I couldn't always say what I wanted to say, but when I had the English skills. Then when I started to take, you know, pen to paper, I found I could write anything and I could say anything and I could do it quite well. So as I majored in history in college, I had to write all sorts of long papers. I was always really good at it because, like I say, that background just inspired me to be able to write and communicate in ways I hadn't been able to do, you know, previously. So it was just a, I think it was a talent that I had early on. I don't have too many talents, but I think that's one of them. And so it served me all through my legal career. And so when I retired, I retired in 2008, but I started on my first book around 2006, 2008, is called Prior the Restraint. And it was about, terrorism and the media. And it sort of was inspired by, at the time, we were fighting the so-called war on terror. And I asked myself, would it look like if terrorism actually took place in the U.S.? And it occurred to me, whenever there's a coup in South America, the first thing that the rebels do is they take control of the TV and the radio station. So that gave me the idea. And, Prior Restraint, if I could just talk about it for just a couple seconds, takes place and begins when the nation's leading TV news anchorman is brutally murdered in the streets of Washington, D.C., seemingly by foreign terrorists. So the media establishment just goes crazy over this. But before they could make any sense of it, one of the leading newspaper columnists in Manhattan is killed along with her editor. So now the media is just hysterical. And they were afraid to broadcast or publish anything that might make them a target of the terrorists. So that was the general theme of my first book. And in May of this year, I published Fractured Power, which is my second book, which is on Amazon. And as probably all my books will do, takes place in large part in Washington, D.C., because that's what I know, and that's where I spent 32 years of my life. And it evokes politics, and not partisan one way, but just how politics and power operate in Washington. It's about power more than anything else. And so that was the start of my second book. I'm now then formulating my third book, which is roughly going to involve the Secret Service and the unexpected death of the president. And again, this is going to be primarily a political thriller that takes place in Washington. So that's sort of the genesis of my the writing background and the genre of storylines that I like to produce.
One question. Well, we want to get into having you tell us a little bit more about Fractured Power, but since we've gone over the book one and two, I'm curious if there were any from the writing of book one, were there some things that you learned as a writer that you applied in book two?
Well, that's a good question. And you're always learning. This is for first time authors, and I speak at quite a few conferences, and I get questions from first time authors. And so what I really have learned the most is not so much about how I choose to write, but about the publishing industry. And I'm self-published on Amazon. You might be surprised how many book titles are on Amazon. If I ask you to guess, you probably wouldn't know, but there's
millions, I'm guessing.
There are millions. There are millions. So the what I've learned is the traditional publishers are somewhat dying out. And these self-publishing platforms like Amazon are in like it's called CreateSpace and Lulu. Mm-hmm. They are really doing the predominant number of publishing, and so I've learned a lot about the not just the writing process but the publishing process, and we can get into that later. I try to I think the hallmark of my people ask me how do I go about starting with a new book, and I think long and hard about it because I like for my storylines to be unique. I think James Patterson, as great of an author as he is, in his 20 some odd novels, if you read three or four of them, you probably read most of them because they tend to be somewhat formulistic. And I like to do new creative stuff all the time. And most of my storylines are not something you've seen before. So when I spend most of my time creating the characters. And that's what I really pride myself on, is creating characters that are so real that that the reader steps into their shoes. And they may not like them, but they understand why they are the way they are.
I'm just looking, I'm the one that Steve just keeps the eye on the clock as we speak. Very quickly, why don't you give us a little bit of the backstory? We know that this book is full of things we do not want to talk about. So the reader, we will not spoil anything for the reader, but just give us a give us a little bit about Fractured Power.
Sure. Fractured Power, as I say on the back cover, is a dark and haunting psychological thriller. You may notice that the cover is in black. Yeah, I think that's appropriate given the storyline. But as I say, it's a psychological thriller about a young man named Aiden Fletcher, who's a brilliant but troubled young man who comes from very humble origins, but he uses his extraordinary ambition and devious ingenuity to reach the pinnacle of power in Washington, D.C. And he becomes a prosecuting attorney whose office investigates a rash of murders of young women in Knoxville, Tennessee. And he uses his position to manipulate the evidence while pursuing a serial killer whose arrest and trial puts Fletcher in the public limelight and forever changes the pathway of his extraordinarily treacherous life. So the Fractured Power is a chilling book about the depths of the human psyche and race to apprehend a killer whose callous disregard for all but himself creates a disturbing puzzle for both law enforcement and his victims alike. And I could add somewhat to that if you want, or we can talk about it later.
I'm going to ask Jim, because Jim, when this book arrived in August, you sat down one day and you started reading. What was it about this book as a reader that just grabbed your attention?
You know, to the degree it was an easy read, you couldn't flip through it because too many facts, too many things going on. So you had to be in there, but it kind of kept you enthralled. And little twists and turns there, but you think, well, maybe this is going to happen. Maybe it's not. You get a little spoiler alert, but it didn't come out quite the way you thought it would be. And I think that our characters, you know, we got a wife, Sarah, which we'll talk about in a little bit with Adrian. Adrian's a brilliant guy. Mm-hmm. He goes through, you know, school. He goes through
school. Yeah.
He becomes, you know, he works for a law firm, he becomes a prosecutor, gets little cases, and he does his right, and he gets bigger cases. He's really brilliant when it comes to doing his job.
Yeah.
And we bring along, at the same time, we bring along an underbelly of what's going on here. People are we're finding bodies. You know, what is this all about? And of course, he's on top of it because he's solving these things.
Right.
And we go back, you know, and you do take us back a little bit occasionally, you know, and you think we give a little fact here and then we go forward for a couple of years maybe, and we come back and we revisit that. And you think, oh, yeah, okay, that's what, you know, that's what it's all about.
Well, Steve, I have to tell you that in 40 years of marriage, I have never had my husband read to me aloud as much as he did with this book. So thank you very much.
That's a compliment. I'm very honored.
I'm watching time. And can you hold your thought?
No.
Can you? Okay.
Just a second.
Okay.
Because for you listeners, you readers out there that are hearing us tonight, we're going to tell you everything we can about this book
without telling you anything.
So... all I can tell you is read the book. Now, if you like mysteries, you'll like this book. If you like thrillers, you'll love it. Okay.
Okay. So, Sam, let's take a listen to bookshop.org.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. With special guest tonight, Steve McGuire.
Yes, and by the way, we just did the little ad about bookshop.org, and tonight's books of Steve's, of course, are available on Amazon, but you can also find them at bookshop.org, our affiliate page, Out West Shop's affiliate page, and when you purchase there, you also support independent booksellers. We like independent authors, and we like independent booksellers. So we just wanted to say something about that. Steve, we think maybe we ought to go a little bit into character development and into, you do write very strong characters. Maybe talk a little bit about the research that you do so they're very true. However you want to talk about it. Let's talk about your characters.
That's great because I enjoy talking about that subject. To me, and I think every writer, they do it for the joy of our writing. I mean, some first-time authors get caught up in what I call the fantasy of being published, which, you know, they're quite prideful of their work, but they think that if I can just get this published by somebody, anybody, it's going to make the New York Times bestseller. It's going to be turned into a great movie, and I'm going to make a lot of money, and nothing could be further from the truth. Most authors don't make a whole lot of money, and one publishing firm did a survey recently which indicated that 70% of all published works do not even turn a profit. So it comes back to the joy of writing that stimulates me. And the part that I enjoy about it the most is to create characters that are so real. That, as I said earlier, in my first book, I think I took five of my major characters back into their childhoods so the reader could understand who they really were. And a lot of them are not people that you're going, that the reader is going to like, but they understand who they are and why they are that way. And so, and then the other thing that I like to think about, when I get my core characters established, I saw a video of James Patterson who says he never starts a book unless he knows how it's going to end. And I'm not like that at all. I have a notion. I have a basic storyline, and then I have a notion of where it's going to go. But I like to think that my characters decide how the story is going to go. And as a group of individuals who I try to make as real as they could possibly be, I like to think that we're all in the same circumstance together. And it's like we're carrying on a conversation. And they carry, you know, the next scene. And on my, you know, third book, which I'm currently working on, I've got a pretty good idea what the storyline is going to be. But I haven't even thought about the ending because I don't, it's not important to me at this juncture. But once I start to write, the first thing I'll do is focus on my young characters, and I give them life. I think as an author, there's no greater compliment than to transport your reader comfort of their easy chair where they're reading to wherever the scene takes place. An example of that is the book Into Thin Air. You've probably by John Krakauer in an expedition on Mount Everest that killed eight people. And it's a first person account. And reading that book, you felt like you were on the side of that mountain. And his ability to transport you to the side of that mountain I thought was just brilliant. And so that's what I try to do. I try to transport the reader to the scene of the storyline. And you do that, in my view, by having really good characters.
Did you ever consider writing this in first person?
I guess I didn't. I mean, I just wrote it the way I wrote it. Someone has to be the narrator in some way. So, I guess the answer to that is no.
I wondered as a reader, especially as we began to maybe figure some things out, and I might, and there were a couple times where I thought, oh, I wonder how interesting, how would this be if this story was being seen through the eyes of, you know, and I have read books where you have several characters are telling their part of the story in first person.
So. Well, and you know, I probably can address that to some extent. Like I just said, I try to put myself in the same place as my characters. So where I, you might say it's not per se first person, but I try to write compelling dialogue between the characters. And as I said to you the other day in our call, some of their comments, some of their language is not pitch perfect English, but it represents who they are. And in this Fractured Power, one of the main characters is a guy named Otis Stamper from East Tennessee.
Very true.
So when he spoke, he had an East Tennessee dialect, and he spoke like someone from that part of the country would speak. And I think it engenders a realism in the character. So that's not first person, but I'm very conscious of trying to be involved in the dialogue with the characters. So it's in essence as if I was talking to them myself. And I was engaged with them in conversation.
We have another, just a moment for a question before we go to our next break. I'm sure you have a question you can't wait to ask.
Who do you write for? Who is your audience, you think?
Well, I think my books, the fact that they largely take place in Washington, D.C., I think there's a whole genre of readers out there that like them political, you know, thrillers, and they like to read about, you know, characters in Washington that perhaps aren't so honorable, because I think a lot of people have the notion that a lot of the politicians behind the scenes aren't that honorable. And in both of these books, I've had corrupt U.S. you know, senators. And I think there's a certain desire to look behind the curtain and see how power really mm-hmm. is exercised mm-hmm. in Washington. And that's the sub theme of both mm-hmm. of these books, is how mm-hmm. power is controlled in Washington. And I think for a lot of people, it's a real insight that they probably ordinarily wouldn't have.
When I don't think it's a spoiler alert, but when Aiden is asked, or he's, there's a possibility that he might run for Congress, and he has a couple, at least one very important dinner meal where he's talking to, you know, various people. And I found that the way that that whole story, part of that storyline, was very compelling, because you imagine that this is the kind of way that you know that works,
right.
But you really illustrate it, you really give it to us, where you kind of go like, that's kind of what I thought, but now it's very clear to me that this is what goes on.
Right. Well, that's what I tried to do. I tried to take the reader behind closed doors
mm-hmm.
and understand the language of Washington and understand how powerful people, you know, control public affairs. Mm-hmm. And it's a somewhat, you know, negative view, but I think if anyone's ever watched the show House of Cards on a Netflix, it's a rather cynical view of Washington, but I think in essence that captures a great deal of what occurs. So I try to show the reader how what power is all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a game of chess where issues are mm-hmm. traded for money and power. And the politicians, basically, irrespective of their political affiliation, they tend to be sponsored by the same corporate entities. And so much of what they do is in support of their corporate sponsor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I like to talk about the art of politics, which, you know, I believe is a lot of politicians go to their home and districts and try to convince their constituents that they're operating in their best interest. Mm-hmm. When in reality, they're working for their corporate sponsors. So, you know, I like to say that America is a capitalist country, and Washington, D.C. is but a microcosm of that, where mm-hmm. fortunes are won and lost mm-hmm. every day. Mm-hmm. And so it's a behind-the-scenes look as to how power is exercised.
All right, let's stop right there. Perfect timing. And let's have a little ad about Out West Shop, one of our sponsors.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer on LA Talk Radio. And by the way, when you shop at OutWestShop.com, use coupon code RADIO and save $10 off a purchase of $75 or more. And we are back with Steve McGuire. We've been having just such a fun time chatting with you, Steve, and talking about your book. I want to talk about Sarah. So would you tell us a little bit about the character Sarah?
Yeah, she's quite a person.
Yeah, just tell us about Sarah.
Well, Sarah Fletcher is Aidan Fletcher's wife, and she's a major character in this storyline of, you know, Fractured Power. She's a trained forensic psychologist and has been in the psychological and medical field her whole career. So when she married Aidan, he was a district attorney, as I said, in Knoxville. And I don't think it's too much of a, you know, spoiler, but after he tries this high profile murder case with a serial killer, he gets himself elected to Congress. So she goes with him to Washington and becomes a forensic psychologist with the FBI. So because so many of these murders that are evoked during the course of the story involve this obviously disturbed individual, Aidan, these murders have occurred in Knoxville, he's constantly in discussions with his wife, Sarah, about the psychological profile of the killer who would do these kinds of things, especially in the fashion that he does them. So she's highly skilled in this area. So she is constantly providing him with input as to what makes these kinds of, you know, killers. And the title of the book, Fractured Power, comes from a psychiatric theory that I researched by a set of three authors whose names escape me right now. But it was about how as a young person, a future killer's identity is shaped by usually abuse, whether it's sexual or psychological or emotional. Mm-hmm. And it had these effect of fracturing their identity. So, and they have to create a new identity so they feel like they're in charge. And so with that theory, fractured identity, I evolved from that with Aidan Fletcher, who becomes a congressman, to fractured power. He in some ways was part of that profile. Mm-hmm. So her role in this is as a unknowing participant in what was going on, certainly in Knoxville. And but her dialogue, especially with her fellow psychiatrists who were investigating these killings, is quite insightful, I think, mm-hmm. and lends itself to some real perspective mm-hmm. regarding what kind of person were they actually mm-hmm. hunting for.
And I think that's something you and I talked about mm-hmm. was what kind of research did you, just mentioned three different authors that you had talked to, but did you actually, I don't know, was your research done face-to-face with people no. that do the kinds of work that Sarah does? Or
no, I okay. didn't do that, but I just spent hours and hours studying online mm-hmm. profiles, and I read several psychological papers about what mm-hmm. makes individuals these kinds of, you know, people who are capable of doing these kinds of, you know, horrible deeds. And so it was just a matter of doing my own research, and some of it was highly medical and it's translation, but you get a feel. And then I studied several famous mm-hmm. but in serial killers, like in Ted Bundy and mm-hmm. other mm-hmm. people. My favorite, you know, serial killer in history is the Zodiac in Southern California.
So when you're so engrossed in all of that study, Steve. How do you maintain, you know, Steve McGuire, like the, you know, the decent, the, you know, how do you protect yourself from, because that's a lot to be,
deep, dark stuff.
I saw a mug the other day that I just had to laugh. It said something like, if you wonder about all those websites I go to about poison and, you know, this and that. And then on the other side of it says, I write serial killer mysteries.
Well, I tell my wife I've always had trouble sleeping at night. That might be a contributing factor. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
But,
wow.
It's pretty fascinating. And as our viewers know, there's a lot of shows on TV that go into these kinds of profiles. Mm-hmm. And I've always found them to be pretty, you know, stimulating.
Yeah.
To use the scientific methodologies they have to find these forensic clues.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's a different thing than the psychiatric profile, but I just have found that to be of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these serial killers have the same sort of disturbed childhoods that have turned them into these kinds of individuals.
So speaking of clues, you do something in throughout this book that's kind of like leaving some clues. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, what I try to do, I mean, I guess every author has their own style, but I think my style is quite distinctive. And what I try to do is, about every other chapter, I'll end the chapter with a provocative phrase. Mm-hmm. And it usually illustrates either the mental state of one of the characters, or it's like the narrator who has absorbed everything that's happened up to that point and then says something, like I say, that's quite provocative. It'll be 8 words.
Yeah.
But it's sort of a pathway into the next chapter, mm-hmm. and into the next aspect of the story. Mm-hmm. And I think most people will probably appreciate that it is sort of a little insight, but they probably can't connect these insights. But I think if you were to read the book and then go back and look at all of these provocative little comments along the way, you might come to the conclusion that yeah, he was telling us about it all along. So I have, fun with that. And I it's a aspect of how I write, and it kind of helps inspire me as well to how I want to focus on the mm-hmm. next part of the book.
Do your characters ever surprise you?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. I would say yes. Yes, they do. Because even though I've created them, they're just like people that you might have known for years, but you don't know everything about them.
Yeah.
And when a certain circumstance arises that's unpredictable, they may react in a way that you haven't thought about. So that's a great question. And I think the answer to that is yes, they do.
You know, there is a scene, there's a trial. And it's riveting. And there's a moment during a closing, it's not a closing argument, each attorney.
Closing
and,
statement.
So thank you. And this particular character in the closing statement does something very provocative. And I couldn't help but think to myself, it's like, did Steve McGuire, author, sort of know that that character was going to do that? Or did that character demand, this is what I'm going to do in this closing statement?
That's another good question. And I think it's part of both. I think that I knew I was going to do that. But this character grabbed that scene and took over.
Yeah.
And so it was a compelling courtroom scene. As a matter of fact, I think the whole chapter on the trial of this, you know, serial killer was a compelling read if you're into courtroom drama. Mm-hmm. But that particular scene you're talking about was, you know, dynamic. And I think that was the character taking over the scene, and it just came out.
We're going to take another break, Steve. So hold your next thought. Okay, hold your question. Back. And we're going to be right back after this word from our good friend Richard Polinelli at Tuscany Bay Books.
Hey, everybody. Richard Polinelli with Tuscany Bay Books. And if you're a reader looking for the next best adventure for your summertime reading, or, you know, coming up on the winter, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com and check out our amazing bookshelf filled with books by some of the best authors out there in science fiction, fantasy, mystery thrillers, westerns, you name it. We've got something for you to read. And if you're an author who has just finished your manuscript and you're looking for a publisher, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com. Fill out our submission form. We'll take a look at it and we'll see if we can get you published and get you doing what you should be doing, which is writing your very next book. TuscanyBayBooks.com, that's your place to go if you're a reader or a writer. And now back to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer with our special guest, Steve McGuire. Steve, we got another question here. I think we talked about this the other night, but writer's block, does that ever occur, or is that something you kind of...
A creative block?
Well, I think sometimes. I don't think of it as a block. I think of it as a pause to where I can really think out what I want to do next. And typically, I might, when I'm really in the throes of writing, I'll write a chapter a week or a chapter every 3 days, and then I'll stop for three or four days, and I'll think about what I want to do going forward, or I might do some more research, knowing where I want to go, and I want to do some more research, like this book, Fractured Power, takes place in some part in East Tennessee. So I did a lot of research on the culture of East Tennessee and the kinds of folks that come from that area. So when I impaneled a jury, you knew how they thought. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple lines in there that are just right out of East Tennessee. Mm-hmm. But that's what I try to make real. I try to make my stories and my characters so real that you can't help but identify with them. Mm-hmm. And I don't call that a writer's block per se. I just think it's part of the process. I'll tell you where I might have a bit of writer's block is before I ever start on a book, coming up with a compelling storyline. And there's a lot of things I could write about, but I want to do something that's unique, something I'm very interested in. And sometimes that takes a long time to come up with that distinctive story that I'm satisfied with sufficient to then kind of outline and then ultimately proceed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. We didn't ask this question the other night when we were chatting, but it came to me. What's the best investment you've made in your literary career?
Wow, that's a good question. I think the best investment has been of my time, where I said earlier, I've made probably over 40 speaking appearances in the last year, and I've been on about 8 or 9 radio shows across the country. And I think just taking the time to discuss what I've been working on, what I do, and, you know, obviously it's to promote the book as well. And I think we create a website, StephenMcGuireAuthor.com, at Stephen with a P-H-E-N. And then we spend time investing on that website. Mm-hmm. And it tells a lot about my background. And then a summary of my books, what I'm doing. And so that's a good investment. But the thing of it is, if we had time, I could talk about some of the lessons I've learned about self-publishing. I don't know if we have time.
We probably don't, but you're going to have a new book out next year, right, Steve?
Yeah, I hope so. So
you mentioned it earlier, but why don't you say it again?
So what's up next? We'll just go right into that. What's up next?
Well, as I explained briefly before we went on the air, my next book is going to involve the Secret Service in Washington and the sudden death of the president. And it's going to involve corrupt politicians again and big corporate entities. And it's going to be something that I think is very timely in quite a few ways. And that's everything I try to do is write stories. I've had many people ask me in conferences, was that real? And I said, no, but it could be.
But it could be.
So that's my next focus.
Is there any tip? I'm looking at our time. Is there any tip that you would like to share about writing or editing or promoting or anything you'd like to share?
I think for a first-time author, one of the things I've learned is be careful, because there's an entire industry that you all are, I'm sure, well aware of that has grown around this self-publishing business. And there's lots of people out there that'll say, oh, I can edit your book and it'll only be $400 or $500. And you think, well, that's not so much. But yet a lot of them don't do that great of a job. So you've got to be very careful. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes use a software called Grammarly, which you might have heard of, which it does a better job than most, human editors. But I think it's just something you have to just jump into with in both feet, and you're going to have a few ups and downs, but just go for it. Then write the way you want to write, get involved, and you'll make a few mistakes, but that's what makes it interesting.
Give us your website one more time before we wrap.
Yeah, it's StephenMaguireAuthor.com. Stephen with a P-H-E-N, and you can purchase my books on both Amazon Books or on Barnes & Noble, and I believe your site also.
Bookshop.org.
So you can always on my website contact me by email and ask questions, and we try to get back to everybody.
Well, we really enjoyed having you with us tonight. Next week, our featured guest is Susan Campo. We've known Susan a long time. Back in 2009, she was the first author that we had in our store that did a book signing. And we're going to be talking. She is a fiction and nonfiction writer, but we'll be talking next week about two of her biographies, Warren Oates, A Wild Life, and Earthbound, David Bowie and the Man Who Fell to Earth. We have a lot of reading to do for next week. Well, we want to thank our special guest tonight, Steve Maguire, for joining us. And if you were watching on Facebook tonight or you were listening at latalkradio.com, we surely appreciate you being part of our listening audience tonight. And you can go back and access these shows like 5 minutes after we're off the air tonight. And thank you to Sam and LA Talk Radio and to the Hot Texas Swing Band. Our parting writing tip tonight is from Stephen King. Do you want to give it to us? We only have time for one. Look, we have like not even 50 seconds left.
Stephen King said, if you don't have time to read, you don't have time to write. Simple as that.
Those are important tools, reading and writing. Until we meet again next week, it's always a great day out west. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Good being here.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.